My co-authors were Stephanie Smith, Shin-Mei Hao, Jen Gao, Sarah Kinder, Keith Isinger, and Bill Whittacomb. Well, why marginal lands? We can talk about lower land costs, the whole food versus fuel debate, rural development, resource utilization, and productivity, but the bottom line is it'll be economically driven, and as biofuel continues to drive commodity prices up, it's going to drive marginal land into production. Well, what constitutes a marginal soil? And obviously that's going to depend upon where you're from. If you're from Missouri area, as we heard some talks yesterday, you're going to look at clay pan soils. If you're out west, arid type conditions, maybe in the northeast, rocky soils. What I'm going to use as a basis for comparison today is going to be the spodosols that we have in the northern part of the state. But whatever you use to characterize your marginal soil, it's basically the common denominator is going to be low productivity. So you're always going to be dealing with the economic and the yield, the issues associated with yield. And the soils that I'm going to use for comparison today are basically in the northern half of the lower peninsula, and they can be characterized as very sandy in texture, very low water holding capacity. Also there's the issues with more northern latitude and the shorter growing seasons, and then also they're very carbon limited soils. We had a little bit of talk on that already today. Well, how much marginal land is there? And we posed that question to our Land Policy Institute, and they use a tool called the National Land Cover Database that's basically aerial imagery, and they can assign use characterizations to look at whatever you want to look at. And then what we did is looked at the total acres that would be arable and available for crop production, and then we subtracted out what we know is currently actively cropped based on our census data, and we come up with about 4.5 million acres that are not actively cropped. And I'll try to include both metric and English units when I can here, mostly for my own benefit, I guess. But this would not include areas that we had some talk about, the pasture areas. This would not be included in that. The pasture areas would be part of the acres not actively cropped, and so would our CRP. We have about 276,000 acres of CRP in Michigan. Well, the rest of the presentation here, I'll focus on some of the challenges with marginal lands. The first, of course, is going to be yield. And what I did here for comparison, I wanted to get a site up there that had some cropping history and had some historical yield data and some recent historical yield data. And I chose an experiment station in Lake City where we've had some studies, and there's also some of my colleagues have had. And then as a comparison, I'm looking at East Lansing. And if you look at the yields, you see there in this column here, not too bad. That would equate to about 127 bushel of corn and three some tons of corn stover. But when you look at comparisons here with the East Lansing data, you can see there is a pretty severe a penalty, a yield penalty there. Interestingly, when we looked at the grasses, these are cool season perennial grasses, and then the warm season, and I only have 1 year's data for the warm season up at the Lake City site, but and these yields aren't too bad, but when you look at they're certainly a very significant yield penalty when you compare it to the productive areas, and I think this bears out what Ken was showing, and this may be an artifact that we spent a lot of resources and time breeding corn to withstand stress, and maybe we haven't put the same focus yet on some of these grasses. Soybean severely penalized, but interestingly the canola, and again I only have 1 year of data up there, very good yields, and there really wasn't any difference in canola yields between the two sites. Converting this then on theoretical biofuel yield on a per area basis, and this in case it's gallons per acre here of ethanol and then biodiesel. You can see that really not too bad, and again here, even though we had a significant drop in yield relative to the productive soils, we still get pretty respectable yields in terms of gallons per acre up there. Well, what is limiting yield? And I'll just pull some data here from a regional study that was done through 99 through 2002, six states involved, where we looked at a number of different soil parameters and also landscape features, and then tried to correlate that back with yield. And basically what we found out, at least in this part of the country here, most of the Corn Belt, was that those soil properties and landscape features that were negatively correlated with crop yield are primarily those associated with limiting water availability. And that really was a common theme throughout most of the state. So we're really dealing in situations mostly with water use. Water is going to be our limiting factor, particularly on these marginal type soils. So in summarizing the yield aspects, marginal soils are going to be competitively disadvantaged primarily due to the water restrictions. So agronomic management practices for low water availability, such as high residue, high water use efficiency crops and cultivars, winter annual crops will be required on a lot of these marginal type soils. Okay, moving to the crop quality component. You saw this earlier in Chad's talk, and basically you can see there is some correlation there with latitude, which bodes well for the marginal soils in this talk, in this basis of comparison anyway. As we move further north, we tend to get a little better yield in terms of gallons per bushel, and we haven't really teased that out, whether that's due to the hybrids yet or just the environment of being further north. But even, I think more interesting than that, we have a study here. This was the same field that we used in that yield limiting study. And from 2006 data, 1 year data again, and I apologize for that. But we do see some very interesting spatial effects, and we see actual range in terms of the quality component. In this case, it's grams per gram, but it'd be the same thing, gallons per bushel, in that field. And we tried to correlate that back with the different soil properties and landscape properties in that field. And the best relationship we got in this case was elevation. And again, we're going to look at this more in the future with more data. Okay, what's more important, basically the crop yield then, or that quality component when it comes to harvesting the most biofuel on a land area basis? And this data will kind of show that. That's supposed to be a straight, looks kind of wavy from up here. It's supposed to be a straight line. On the y-axis here, we have the quality component. In this case, it's ethanol in gallons per acre. And then when we look at the ethanol yield in gallons per bushel, we don't really get a good relationship at all. There's basically not a relationship with that quality component and the amount you're going to harvest on a land area basis. But when we regress that against the corn grain bushels per acre, we see a very significant regression there of 0.872. So basically, it's going to be yield that's going to matter, not the quality component when it comes to corn grain ethanol, at least. And we can look in the data for similar type associations with soybean here. This is work out of Purdue with Tony Vine's group. A little bit different here, but they're looking at seed yield on an area basis there, and then the concentration of oil, in this case, grams per kilogram, is fairly flat. But when you look at that same component here on the quality component here, and then the seed yield per area, we can see again that relationship. So soybean grain yield on a per acreage basis has a greater effect on overall quality component yield than on oil concentration also. So for agronomists, it's going to be about getting those yields at this point in the game. So to summarize the crop quality aspects, there's a high degree of spatial variability in energy crop quality component per unit of the crop yield, but maybe that doesn't matter a whole lot. But I think we need to get at those underlying, we need a little more work in that area to find out what's causing that. The negative impacts on crop quality don't appear to be directly attributable to marginal soils. And again, it's going to be about yield of the crop as opposed to the quality component. Okay, the last area I wanted to look at was environmental sustainability. And Robin did a good job looking at basically everything but the soil carbon. In this case, these soils that we're dealing with are really carbon limited, so we'll take a little closer look at that. And just as a reminder, when it comes to sustainability from a grower, if you ask them, it's very clear. Quite often it's going to be about profit, so we need to keep that at the forefront also. So basically, using textbook values, and I apologize for the busyness of the slide, but we can calculate that we need about 3 3/4 tons per acre of crop material returned to these soils to really maintain the fragile amount of carbon that we have there. And then so that would basically leave about 1,000 kilograms per hectare to take off 1,000 pounds an acre, which really isn't worth the trip to get on these types of soils. And furthermore, that's confounded. If you had soybeans in a rotation up there, then you're at a deficit. So really, we've got carbon issues here with these types of marginal soils, where we want to really keep the, from an agronomic and environmental perspective, we want to keep crop residue on these soils. So what we wanted to look at was, well, can we have agronomic management practices in place that would enable us to remove some of that plant residue carbon if we returned carbon back to these soils? And we looked at both compost and manure, and then also a cover crop. And this is only 3-year data here, and most carbon studies are going to require 20 years, I realize that, to show trends. But we could definitely see some things emerging from this data. And this is based on grams of CO2 equivalents per meter per year, basically carbon removed from the atmosphere. So our inputs here, we have the change in the soil carbon. This is the residue carbon on top of the soil. This is the actual flux that we empirically measured coming off the soil. And then these are book value input fluxes. Again, they look small, but remember they're on a meter squared basis. And then we come up with a net global warming potential, again in the gram CO2 per meter squared. And we can effectively sequester carbon with the compost and manure treatments. However, in the short duration of this study, we were not able to increase carbon with the cover crop. And again, this is only over 3 years. I don't have carbon data of my own for perennial grassland, but if you go into the literature, CAST has a good summary of this. And they basically, looking at a number of different studies, you can get a net of 900 pound carbon increase with forage type of perennial grasses when you remove the above ground portion of that biomass. So really, this type of system from sustainability, especially with the carbon, looks pretty attractive for the types of marginal soils that we have in the northern part of our state. So just to summarize the sustainability component here, corn stover removal systems on marginal lands with inherently low carbon levels are not sustainable over time in terms of soil carbon loss with that corn stover removal. However, you can have management practices in place that will accommodate that. And again, with the rye, and this may be a short time thing there, because we do have data on other types of marginal soils in our long-term ecological study that has shown the ability to maintain carbon in rotations with cover crops, and those are over 17-year duration. And then lastly, the perennial grass systems may be more suitable from the environmental sustainability perspective on carbon-limited soils. Any time for questions?
Yes, we have time for a quick question. Let me ask one quickly. Those soils are ones where I think native vegetation was pine forest, probably. Do you know what the productivity was of them before cropping?
They would have been developed under pine, as you say. The productivity before cropping, I don't really have a measurement for that. Probably be measured in terms of white-tailed deer and.
Well, that's something. Any one more question? Yes.
Do you have any feeling for additional carbon losses of conversion of, say, abandoned farmland or whatever the previous vegetation was to succession of fields?
Yeah, we do have data on that. Stu Granny that we published with, we found that if we disturb those soils just once, we can undo probably, 25 years of carbon buildup in 1 year if we go in with an aggressive tillage implement like a mobile plow. So we do have to be careful about how we bring these marginal lands back into production if growers are going to be doing that.
And how many years would it take for you to replace that carbon using perennial grasses?
Well, at your 900 pounds a year, it's going to take quite a while. If you really throw the carbon amendments to it, you can shorten that.